Welcome to Profit Boss Radio, where successful women have paved the road to their own financial freedom. Each week, your host, Hillary Hendershot, financial coach, money mindset expert, and experienced wealth manager, will help you discover the keys to the wealth and peace of mind you want and deserve in her no-nonsense and authentic style. Starting right now.
As often as I can on Profit Boss Radio, I feature women who are not financial experts or coaches or gurus, but they've fought their own financial demons, they've learned lessons, and they're willing to share those lessons with you. I call these women everyday heroines. This kind of sharing, having honest and open conversations in this, your wealth mastermind, lets you in on how other women around you are creating their own economic independence. Joining us today is Cassie Crossley. She's a podcaster, an IT executive, and an everyday heroine. I hope this inspires you. Cassie, welcome to Profit Boss Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Hillary.
Cassie, what was money like for you when you were growing up? What did your parents teach you about money, or what did you learn when you were a kid?
Well, I learned that daddies aren't necessarily good with money, even though you think they should be.
Oh yeah, what happened?
Well, I learned as I got older, when I asked my mom how things got into certain situations, she said that my dad, God rest his soul, was a good earner, but he could spend as quick as he could earn. He liked to just live in the moment, and we didn't have enormous things or elaborate things, but there's just wasn't really any budgeting. So I would often come home, especially in the teenage years, and find the phone disconnected or the electricity turned off, because it's a lot easier for my dad just to ignore the bills and pay them when things got turned off. He would stop by the utilities place or the phone company and pay the bill for the last 90 days. And that's the way life was. They never really had a savings account. He did work for a large corporation and had credit unions and could get loans. But other than that, I didn't learn anything. So I actually was very good at saving. I bought my first car when I was only 15 because I had saved every penny I'd ever earned when I was babysitting. And then I started working at a fast food restaurant. I put my money away and saved it, but I never got that concept of budgeting. So when I was on my own at 19, I did all the wrong things.
So what was it like for you to have a dad who didn't pay the bill and the phone got cut off? Do you remember being angry at him, or what was that like?
I was definitely was not angry, just embarrassed, because I would have to go to a neighbor's house and say, hey, can I use our phone? Something's going wrong. You know, there must be an issue. I never would say. I know my dad didn't pay the bill because we had a stack of bills 2 feet high sitting on the kitchen counter that nobody ever opened.
So you're going to the neighbors and kind of telling white lies because you're embarrassed.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it. And did your parents fight about that?
Yes. I remember many discussions that they had that were money related. I know that things were very tight. I know their mortgage went into arrears several times. And in fact, when my dad passed away 6 years ago, I paid it all up. They were about to be foreclosed on, so I paid it all up, and we were able to sell my mom's home a year later.
Wow.
For no money. I mean, it was just get out.
So when you started working and started saving so well, was that kind of in reaction to how bad your dad was with money? Or did saving just come naturally for you?
I think the saving part came naturally because I didn't have small needs. I would save my money for big things. I wanted the car. I wanted, you know, whatever was a large ticket item. Mm-hmm. That's what I would save up for. And since I didn't have any concept of credit cards when I was young, saving was the only way to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when did the money troubles start?
My first credit card. My first real credit card. Well, I guess any credit card. I got my first credit card as a gas card. And then they sent me flyers that said, oh, you can buy other things with your gas card. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. So I even started accumulating debt with the very first one. And then I got department store cards and Visa cards. I just accumulated up, like most college kids, I would say.
Yep.
I started to accumulate without really a salary. And I always worked. Even when I was in college, I would work part-time to put food on, you know, my table. But I just racked up the credit card interest bills. And the interest rates at that time were 13, 14, 15%, not the 25% you see in some places nowadays, but that's still quite a bit. By the time I did get married very young, my first marriage. I'm on my third marriage, last marriage. So I did marry when I was 19, and I think we had gotten up to about $28,000 in credit card bills within a year and a half.
Oh my, what year was this?
This was in around 89. Yeah. 1989. So that was a lot of money then.
So what do you, at this point in your life, when the credit card bills come in, what do you think about that balance? Do you think I should pay it off? Or is your mindset automatically, how can I get another credit card so I can keep spending?
After that, I did not keep any balances on credit cards. There were once or twice where I have been charged an interest rate by accident, or I just was in a situation, an emergency where I did not have enough savings at that time, but I learned how dangerous they were. So I have paid them off.
No, I mean, back at the time when you're carrying all this debt.
Yeah.
I'm kind of asking into the, what do you, when you look back on it, what do you think was the, missing piece for you in terms of you kept racking up debt and not paying it off? What was the mindset that allowed that to happen?
The mindset was the minimum monthly payment. And I knew better because I actually, when I was 18 years old, I started working in the Macy's credit department at one of the local one of the local stores for 2 years. So I saw all these people coming in to pay $10 a month, but their interest charges were 30. And I figured, well, if they're only paying $10 a month, I guess it's okay for me to pay my minimum payments too. And so that's what I did. And it would snowball.
So just short-term thinking
kind
of a thing. Okay. And then how old were you when you got married the first time?
19.
You were 19. And did you join finances with him?
Yes, I did, which was, in hindsight, not a good idea. He was actually 7 years older, had moved back home after a divorce. So he had a lot of debt. I had still was just building up my credit, so I didn't have a lot yet. Mm-hmm. And we did join everything except for he had a car loan and I had my own vehicle. But the joint checking accounts and all of that, he lost his job and he was having trouble getting jobs. So I was trying to support us. I stopped going to school full time. I started working full time instead. And I made a good income. I was a computer programmer. But when you're trying to fill the gap of a 2-salary household at the age of 19, it's really hard. And I still didn't, it's like, oh, we were fine this month. So we bought a hot tub. I mean, it was so stupid looking back at it. I'm like, oh, $5,000 hot tub, $125 a month payment. Oh, I got $125 I can figure out, you know, how to find. And I just didn't make any sense. I was just buying stuff because it made me feel better.
And so he's looking for work. And is it straining your relationship that you're the breadwinner? I mean,
yeah,
that's something most men struggle with.
Yeah. That was not good for our relationship. Because I expected that you should, if you're not working, you should put 40 hours into finding a job at least. And that was not occurring. And I was trying to figure out how to pay everything. And it got to the point where I couldn't pay his truck payment because he had a super high interest rate. And I remember the night it got towed away and we were stuck with one car.
Yeah, that's how that goes eventually.
Yeah.
So did he find work?
not while we were together. When we separated, we were less than 2 years married. So when we separated, he was out of work. So he moved back home and I moved back home.
Okay. And so when you separated, what were the financials of the divorce?
We just looked at the debt that we had accumulated together and essentially split that in half.
Oh, kind of a handshake deal.
We got a separation before we did the divorce. So we had separation papers and agreed to it amicably and decided, you take this credit card, I'll take this one and keep paying on it. And then we balanced out the bills. And so I ended up, after all of that $28,000, about $14,000 of it coming to me.
Interesting how you remember the numbers so well. And so did you get remarried right away, pretty much?
No, I waited for about 5 or 6 years. I got engaged and then I got disengaged. But I did not remarry till I was 26. And by then I was on solid ground. When I had gotten separated from my first husband, like I said, I moved back home, but I moved back home to pay off the bills. My parents took a loan from their credit union and helped me pay some of the bills because it was just a lot of stress. I really needed to focus. So I paid everything down. And then I got my own apartment and I got some good jobs, a lot of increase in salary. I ended up buying my first home when I was 25 years old.
Wow.
But this is in Atlanta. The home prices, it was a $100,000 home. It was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. They were not high prices then.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you're 25, you own a home, and is there still debt?
Just the mortgage and a car payment.
Okay. All right. So, and then how did the second, well, tell me, then you got remarried about 2 years later.
Yes. When we met, he was a bit younger than me, but he did not have a professional career. So more of a general young 20s kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He went back to college. So he worked full time at fast food and I was making about 2 to 3 times his salary. When we married, he stayed working. But then when we were expecting, I said, well, we can put her in daycare or you can go to school full time and take care of her. So he actually did play the stay-at-home dad role for a year while we were still together. That marriage was also short. It was about 2 years, 2.5.
And how did you broach the money subject with him as a result of how money went in the first marriage?
I controlled everything. He got an allowance, really. That was easier for both of us. But I was very scared and skittish to give any control. It was my mortgage. It was my car payment. He needed a vehicle at some point in time. He had an older vehicle. We did get a vehicle where I think we paid for cash because first we got him a motorcycle, but then there was a motorcycle accident. And so he was able to get a car, but it was very, I was more of the parent figure, I guess, or it was not an equal relationship. Let's put it that way.
Sounds like not emotionally or financially.
No, no. He was definitely, he was a great dad. And when he had his good days, he was good. It was, he had some emotional things going on and it was a different dynamic, one that I wasn't used to.
And what did he think of the allowance situation? Was he fine with that?
Yes, essentially. He didn't know too much about finances. He's definitely learned over the years. He is now very good with teaching my daughter how to budget. I teach her how to budget. We went through that kind of lessons because of just our own backgrounds. He's always had money struggles. He still continues to have those, and his father helps him out quite a bit.
When you were married in your second marriage, were you experiencing struggling with money, or did you think this was a step up from before?
Well, it was a step up because I did not feel I was underwater. I was careful about how I was spending the money, but I also made that a more strict budget because I could not rely on anybody. I had to assume that I was only going to be on one income, mm-hmm. because that's the lesson that I had learned before. It's like, okay, yes, you make money, but that could change any second. And then he went to college, so we didn't have that extra income. So it was all very tight. I had started my 401k, and I had done in my early 20s, I had taken the loan against the 401k to help pay for the down payment of the home. I put that money back. So I was saving the minimum on my 401k that would get matching, which has generally been about 6% for all of the different companies that I've worked for. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I didn't have more than a couple $100 in my bank account at any one point in time. I never had a real savings account.
Even though you had a pretty high income.
Yes. Well, I had a high income, but when you're trying not to carry a credit card debt, there's something comes up every month. There's tires, there's school books there. I was still going to school, and I graduated when she was a year and a half old. So I was still going part-time and doing all of that while trying not to take any loans. It just takes the money. You know, it's good because I never took a school loan in my undergraduate, and I went 11 years part-time, but it's a struggle. It's one I don't regret, because if I had taken those loans, I would have probably used the money for things that I did not need, mm-hmm. but I did not have that security that I wish I had. So I was nervous all the time.
Yeah, that's the feeling I got when you said, you know, I couldn't count on anyone. I could be out of work at any time. I felt probably you didn't experience security.
Not at all. Yeah. Not at all.
Yeah. But you kept your promise to yourself to not go back into debt or not carry credit card debt, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So then marriage number two lasted a few years?
Yes. I was, I think about 29, right around 29, 30 when we divorced.
Mm-hmm. And you had how many children with him?
Just one.
Okay.
And I remarried when I was 34, and we have a now, so that young one that I had originally, she's now 19, and I have a 12-year-old. They're both girls.
Great. And so you meet husband number three, and you're thinking this is the one. And how do you share with him how money has gone for you in the past? And what did you want to create with him financially? So how did you tell me the steps that you two took to create your financial partnership?
Well, let me step back just a tiny bit, because when we first started dating, he actually was afraid to talk to me about money, because I guess I had been open with the process that I was following. I was saving for retirement. I had upgraded my home. I had sold the home that I first bought and moved over to another part of town to be closer to my parents, because as a single mom, I wanted that security for having a backup in case I got in a car accident. I knew that he was familiar enough with the salary range I was in, and he admitted after we had been dating, I guess about a month, that he was severely in debt and had been going through credit counseling service. And he said he was afraid to tell me that because he knew
you intimidated him.
Yes. And I had been very upfront about how my previous husbands had money issues, and there were a lot of money problems in our marriages, and that I wanted somebody that was secure and had a good job and really had their act together. And when you have a significant debt so much that you had to go to credit counseling service, that doesn't fit that mold. So he was nervous about telling me, and I was pretty amazed by how much, I can't recall exactly how much debt, but I think he had about, it was over 40,000, I think, not including school loans, because I think the school loans themselves were over 50,000.
And at what point did you get your hands on those numbers? At what point did you know how much debt there was?
Pretty soon after, I asked him what it looked like. And he said, well, I can just show you the statements. So he was very open. He showed me the statements, and I immediately put it into a spreadsheet after we had been dead. I'm like, I can't read these statements. I want to know the full balances. So we went back and got all of the balances for his accounts and the interest rates. And I said, well, why are they doing it this way, this way, this way? They should be paying this one first because it's a higher interest credit card. And you'd end up finishing sooner by about 2.5 months if they reordered it. So he actually called them and they said, yeah, we'll reorder it to make these payments in this amount. So I became a coach.
I could just imagine how he's feeling as you're going through these statements. First of all, he obviously was doing a little bit of ostrich syndrome, keeping his head buried because he didn't want to know the totals. And he's sweating under the collar, right, as you're adding up these numbers. And then you start helping him like that.
Yeah, it was a progression over a few months. It was definitely that point in time in that relationship where, well, I'm going to get this involved. I guess this might be the person. I'll see how it goes and if he can take a hold and make these adjustments. And one of the hardest things for him was the quality of what he was purchasing, because he had some credit cards at some expensive stores. And I said, I don't understand why you're just not shopping at Target. Target's polo shirts are just as fine as an Eddie Bauer shirt, and you can get 4 at Target, so you can throw it away every 2 weeks if you really need to. So we had a lot of discussions, our differences. He's from Los Angeles, very much an area where the quality of what you have is very important. And I lived most of my adult life in Atlanta, and it's, you know, Target's fine. Hey, I'm not shopping at Walmart. So
right.
We had a lot of discussions on that difference of what we think money should be spent on. And those discussions continue to this day, but they were really heavy the first couple of years.
So did you at any point consider, you know, some people would have said, I'm not walking into that much debt, right? Like, I've already learned that lesson. I'm not paying that money off for you. Did you ever think, I should, maybe this isn't the right guy, everything else is there, but I'm not doing this again?
Well, I had different doubts. Just because he was very eager to get married. And it was more around the, I've been through this before, let's see how it goes. When it came to money, he seemed authentic, and he was, about getting a hold of what it was. And that's really what I was looking for, is that authenticity and integrity. That he would do
willingness to change too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it did become very similar to the second relationship where I was monitoring every penny once we got married, because I wanted to make sure all of that debt was paid off.
Okay. So you are someone who, when things don't go the right way the first time, you want to master command it. I do the same thing.
Yes.
I do the same thing. And how did that go between the two of you?
I think for the most part, as long as I wasn't asking about it, it was fine. As soon as I would start to ask questions, more like interrogate, then that would cause a lot of angst in our relationship. And I was an interrogator. I will truly own that. And I'm like, I don't understand this $7 charge. What was that?
Oh,
line by line, it's just easier now with the cushion we have and such. I don't look at things because I second guess. And even if I agree to it, then I have those regrets. So I still do it, and I try not to. It's very hard because I look at this as, I've made an investment. I mean, there's a cost to having a husband. And I know that sounds terrible, but I was single for a long time. So I knew a couple of years at least. And I knew what it was like to be a single parent versus married. And my spending income went down when I was married because more increase in food, the additional expenses just in general. Unfortunately, I treat it like a profit loss, and that's the way the interrogation comes. So I know it's not very flattering, and it's very difficult to be married to me.
Lady, a lot of men have wanted to be married to you. I'm not so sure it's that difficult. Are you, you put a price tag on having a husband, huh?
Yes, I do. And unfortunately, that conversation comes up about once a year. It used to come up a lot. I'm like, you know, it's so much cheaper to be single for me than it is to be married. Because even vacations, if I'm single and I take a vacation, I know that it can cost more if you take certain vacations that require two parties. But if you're single, you can crash on somebody's couch or you can go somewhere cheap and I can stop. I don't have to worry about a meal. It's just much different. And that was, I'm a very independent married woman. So it does come up quite a bit in our conversations, and money is part of that conversation about the profit loss.
So how far into your marriage did you pay off the $90,000 in debt?
The credit cards were paid off in about 2.5 years. The student loans continued on until he had a relative with, you know, there was some inheritance. So we were able to pay that off. So he is completely debt free. And I say he because we have car loan, and I think that one's under my name. One thing that I haven't mentioned is that every time we buy a car, I only put it under one person. And the reason I do that is because that first marriage and trying to split up, no, the second marriage, sorry, I can't even remember. The second marriage, we both owned the car, and trying to, you can't change the name out of the car. So I finally ended up having to sell the car, and binding him to sign the title and the loan and doing all that was such a nightmare that I knew what was difficult to separate from an asset standpoint and what was easy. And so I found out cars and mortgages are difficult. So he was never on a mortgage. Once we sold the third home, which was still under my name, we're now in a parsonage because he's a pastor. So we don't own a mortgage, but we have cars. So he's got a car under his name and I've got a car under mine.
I think, I'm not an expert on it, but I think in California, only one person can be on title of any vehicle. So, but I'm not sure. You're still in Georgia?
No, no, we're in California, and the cards are through loans out of California, but I didn't even want to go through the loan process. So when we got the loan for one of the cars, I said, this is your official car. You do the loan, start building up your credit. And then the car, most of the other cars that we've bought, we put under mine because I have a income for 3 to 4 times what he makes.
So it sounds like you took on a coaching and teaching role in order to get out of debt. And then as the debt got paid off, did you feel that a transition was called for, that you, did you want to create more of an egalitarian context, a shoulder to shoulder context, like teamwork with your husband, or is it still this way?
We did work on the teamwork for sure. We actually went through the Financial Peace University with Dave Ramsey and followed that model so we could learn more of the process of budgeting and saving. It was stuff I knew, but it was new to him. And it was really good because it was a course that we could do together with our church members. So we really enjoyed that and got to meet Dave in person because my husband started coaching those classes at the churches. So he did learn, and we became very much on equal ground and the decision. So that was very helpful. Now, that's just on the day-to-day pieces. Mm-hmm. When it's regard to retirements, he doesn't involve himself at all. I manage all of that and keep the account numbers and everything up to date so that in case something happens to me, he could find the information. But I manage all of our investments and also the taxes. I'm lucky if I can get him to look at it to sign his name.
He's
and
just
that always
interested.
Makes me, no, and it makes me very nervous because we started to use a CPA for the first time. I'm like, you really need to be on these calls and involved in this type of process.
What do you make of that he doesn't even want to look at the tax return?
He trusts me. I just have so much concern and baggage in regards to trusting other people with money. I think he should be more of an auditor and verify my funds because I believe in checks and balances and making sure that there are more than one person aware of what's going on. I don't want what happens to other people where money disappears.
Yeah.
So I think he should be checking on me, but he trusts me.
So I could be messing this up, buddy.
Yeah, well, at work, putting aside a stash in the Caribbean, you wouldn't even know.
I'm siphoning funds to my Swiss bank account over
That's
here.
Right. Yeah, you travel to France all the time, Cassie. So why, you know, what's this Geneva all the time? Yeah.
So as you look back on it, would you do anything differently, or are you in a place about it where you honor the process?
If I look back on all of it or just this past marriage?
The whole thing. Yeah, all of it.
The whole thing. I wish I had learned true budgeting and saving from the beginning. I did not set up, have any kind of security. As I said, that was a big deal. If I had learned that process and really what I began to learn in my mid-20s, I would have saved myself a lot of grief in the first, you know, the first years of my life. I did not, that satisfaction that you get, you know, just like if you eat a cupcake, you know, you got that just immediate gratification and satisfaction. That's what I was living on. And I don't think that's unusual for people in their early parts of their careers. It's like, oh, I just got a $2,000 raise. I can go spend $2,000 on this, not even considering the taxes. So I wish I had understood that part of it, and school was no help. I think that there should be a mandatory financial class in every high school education, usually about junior year, maybe when kids are 16 or 17, because until you learn what can happen, and you just don't understand it. And that's what I regret the most.
And I imagine you're really driving this message home with your children.
Yes. My 19-year-old, we have a budget for her apartment. She was very aware of everything that I was paying for the first year. And then she's actually on her own, was able to find an apartment because she said, my budget won't allow me to have this rent. So I need to find something $300 cheaper. Here's my budget. Here's how much money we have. I have this in savings. If things are going fine, I'll be able to put this extra money in savings. And so, yeah, she really has gotten
the message. Your eyes welled up with pride.
They have. And she actually was a bit angry when I said, well, I've got some money put aside just in case there's an emergency. Well, there's not going to be an emergency. I have my own money now. Yeah, that was like, I'm just keeping it as an emergency. You're not the only one who can end up with an emergency. In fact, I just had all my mom's family are in Denham Springs, Louisiana, which had the severe flooding. And we just sent some things and some financial assistance over to the family in Denham Springs, and we'll send whatever more that they need because some of their homes are completely destroyed. Some of my aunts and uncles and cousins.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yes. And that's why the security thing is a big deal for me. If you can't help out other people in an emergency, let alone yourself, then you need to reprioritize what you're spending things on, I think.
Do you feel that you have achieved that security that you didn't have before?
I think I'm 90% there. Of course, I'd love to be more secure. I don't think I'll ever say 100%. But if I was without a job for a period of time, I would be okay. In fact, once we moved to California, we only lived on my husband's income for 6 months, which, like I said, was a big difference. And then it didn't take me that long to find a job. I found one after a week, but my father had passed away in that period of time. So having that security and that cushion really makes a big difference because you can make the right choices. And instead of making choices that are just unplanned for, that you may make the wrong decision. Like if your car breaks down, I can rent a car for a month while I'm trying to find the right thing.
When you say cushion, do you mean what most people call emergency savings?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And how much emergency savings makes you feel like that's enough cushion?
Generally, it's for about 3 months of my salary, but then I also have a line of credit that with my credit union that's pretty significant, but a very low interest rate. Mm-hmm. So if I have to use that as a backup, then I use that too.
Instead of drawing down retirement savings.
Right, right. Yeah, and retirement savings are definitely, I've not touched those. They continue to grow pretty heavily.
And you're contributing, you're probably maxing out your 401k.
Yes. 401k, we pay extra into my husband's pension benefits. He's a pastor that has retirement as part of his conference. And then also I do employee stock purchase plan with my work and have some other incentives that have been given to me. So I have quite a bit in assets that I don't plan to touch.
What's your financial vision for yourself now?
Okay, so financially, this is where I do joke about with my husband that I guess I have always pretty much planned for I'll be just having to really support one lifestyle. And he hates that, so he'll laugh when he hears this. But really, I'm not planning to sightsee around the world after I retire. I'm doing that all now. And that's part of the vision right now is we spend a quite elaborate amount of money on vacations over the last 5 or 6 years and will continue for the next few years because we want to see these places and experience these things while our children are at a good age and while we're able to get around. So we do Europe, we do Asia, we do cruises. And so when I look at my retirement, the main thing is that I have a home that I am able to live just comfortably on a retirement and that I have enough for my medical needs. But I do not plan to do any kind of activities that would cost quite a bit of money. I can't even golf. So that's the most expensive one I can think of that my mom does right now. And she loves it, but I can just see myself participating in the community and church.
So what I'm hearing from you is like simple, a little conservative, but secure.
Yeah. So and generally, if you look at my goal, retirement goal, and I know that inflation and all of that, but I'm still only looking at about needing $1.5 million to keep from drawing down on that principal. Uh-huh. But I have no problem with pulling out principal because I feel that it should be there. I'm not trying to save an inheritance for my children. I want to enjoy life. I want to have some satisfaction, but I do think that that's not something I need to save $3 million for because I'm not going to need that. But I do want to make sure that while I am saving all of that money for retirement, that it's not impacting my current life. And that's why we spend quite a bit on vacation. So, you know, I probably, at this moment, only about not just my 401k level and those type of investments are only about 300 to 400,000, depending on how bad the market can be at that time.
Or good.
Good or bad. And then other types of incentives that I have are close to another six figure on that. And then my retirement, both with Social Security, if it's still around, we've got the pensions. So we'll be looking at a decent income, definitely something at the level where we could live comfortably without concern. So
you think you're on track to achieve the retirement you've designed for yourself?
Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Cassie, thank you so much for sharing your story on Profit Boss Radio. I am moved by your generosity. And I think the lesson here is really, and I know you had something you wanted to wrap up with, but I think the lesson here is really you can recover from the mistakes of the past if you're diligent and disciplined and maintain that vision.
Yes. And the lesson that I wanted folks to get is I know what it's like to compare yourself to others. I compared myself for a long time as, oh, I'm 30 years old and I don't have 500,000 in the bank. So I don't want people to compare themselves to me. What you need to do if you are looking at your future is really look about what your needs are. Don't compare yourself. Just create a plan for you to get there. You're going to run into struggles. You're going to find things that you need to deviate. And if that means that you can send money to a family member, then do that because that'll mean a lot more than whether or not you have an extra $2 when you're 65. So just do the right thing, but don't pressure yourself into where should you be? Just have the plan.
Cheers to that. I love the moral of that story. Thanks again, Cassie. It's been an honor having you on the show.
Thank you so much, Hillary.
Hey, Profit Boss. Yes, you. Lean in here. I've got something to tell you. Do you remember that movie Mean Girls with Lindsay, whatever her name is, and the fabulous Tina Fey? It was all about this group of in-girls, the Plastics. And Lindsay Lohan plays the new girl who wants desperately to be part of the clique. You get the picture. Tina Fey was hilarious in that, by the way. Did you know she wrote it? Anyway, I want to tell you about another group on Facebook. It's nothing like the Plastics. I mean, come on, we're not in high school anymore. And seriously, it's much cooler to lift each other up instead of tearing each other down, don't you think? Because as we all know, as women, it can be tough to know who to trust when it comes to getting real about money. That's why I'm so proud of all the courageous women in the Profit Boss Facebook group. It's kind of like hanging out with your best friends. You know, ladies who've earned the right to be called your friend because you're not afraid to show a little bit of vulnerability. It's like that. And by the way, we let the men join too. So if you want to be part of a group of wholehearted women and men who aren't afraid to grow and support each other, give us a visit and bring your friends. Just go to hillaryhendershot.com/profitboss and you'll immediately be redirected to a place where you can request admission, which we will give you willingly. I'll see you on the inside.
Thank you for listening to Profit Boss Radio, where creating success on our own terms happens every day. You're not alone in your journey to a rich life, and that's why Hillary is here to add value in each and every episode. See you next time on the podcast for women and money.